There's increased talk that sports betting may soon be legal in the U.S. Due to a crackdown in immigration policies, there's a work shortage that is causing problems on the backstretches across the nation. The Horse Racing Integrity Act has once again made its way through the nation's capital. For the National Thoroughbred Racing Association, those issues and others must have its president and CEO Alex Waldrop working overtime. And Waldrop is this week's guest on the Thoroughbred Daily News podcast, brought to you by TaylorMade.
And here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown.
Over the past four decades, TaylorMade has risen from a small boarding operation to the worldwide leader in thoroughbred sales and marketing. Here's Hall of Fame trainer Jerry Hollendorfer.
TaylorMade sales follow many horses that are training at the racetrack. And they are particularly adept at evaluating mares and placing them with a proper stallion after their racing careers are over. They are very straightforward and are also experts on confirmation of younger weanlings and yearlings.
My name is Tia Andrini, and I am from San Mateo, California. I've been doing business with TaylorMade for about a year now, and it's been one great experience after another. It started with my first TaylorMade venture when I bought an interest in the filly Catherine Sophia, which ultimately landed me 3 weeks later in the middle of the winner's circle of the 2016 Kentucky Oaks with her. The TaylorMade team is a group of truly outstanding individuals. They are knowledgeable, professional, and completely customer service driven. To me, the TaylorMade name epitomizes the term trusted advisor. That is exactly what they are, and I am very proud to be associated and doing business with them.
Discover what TaylorMade can do for you. Visit TaylorMadeFarm.com.
And welcome back. This is Bill Finley, your host for the TDN podcast. And as we mentioned in the opening, there are a lot of important off-track issues facing racing today, and the NTRA is dealing with many of them. Welcome Alex Waldrop, who will shed some light on what's going on in Lexington, D.C. and elsewhere. And welcome, Alex. And before we get into the various issues that I've already mentioned, let's just talk about the NTRA as a whole. And when it started in 1998, a lot of people thought it would be the closest thing the sport would ever have to a commissioner's office, and one of its primary missions was to market the sport. The 2017 NTRA is definitely a very different organization than that one from 1998. So how would you sum up what the NTRA is today and what is its role and place in horse racing?
Bill, first, thank you for letting me join you this morning or this afternoon. I appreciate this opportunity. I think to sum up the NTRA today, you'd have to say that we have evolved. We've evolved just like the industry has evolved. We, in 1998 and today, we focus on areas that were identified by our key stakeholders. Those are racetracks, our horsemen, owners, breeders, trainers, advanced deposit wagering companies, and for the first time, really, you know, horse players. In fact, I think horse players have become a key area of our focus over the past several years. You know, we established a board seat for a horse player, for a representative, and we've built the National Horse Players Championship, formerly known as the National Handicappers Championship, into a major industry event. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But I think we're the only organization in racing, to my knowledge, that has a board seat specifically for a horse player. And it's not window dressing. Judy Wagner, who's on our board, is focal. She's effective. She's a great advocate for horse players. She's also a regulator, which gives us a great perspective on a whole new aspect of the business, and that is the actual commissioners in the sport who govern the 38 different states where we do business. But we think it's necessary to have the horse players involved because, as we all know, they fuel every aspect of this game through the wagering. Now, that's not all we do. We have we continue to work and spend a lot of time on legislative advocacy in Washington, D.C. That's where I spend most of my time, and I think recently we've been very busy up there, and we'll get to that later, I hope. Our co-op advertising purchasing program, the NTR Advantage, is still a major force. We sold more than $50 million worth of John Deere tractors and equipment last year and have done so for the last 15 years. And John Deere still holds us as one of their top customers. And they are a great sponsor for the industry, sponsoring the Breeders' Cup, and it's a great relationship. We talked a little bit about the NHC. It's by far our largest marketing program and maybe the largest marketing program in the game today. And in some ways, it is our national marketing program. One other area that I'll mention briefly, but it is important and it deserves a lot more discussion, is the whole safety and integrity area. The NTRA Safety and Integrity Alliance now accredits some 24 tracks. We look for a whole host of safety issues that need to be addressed, and as well as integrity, primarily through wagering integrity and, of course, medications, drugs and medications. We also are very involved. I personally am involved with the Racing Medication and Testing Consortium, which is sort of consistent with that that support or that focus on safety and integrity. So that safety and integrity is something that wasn't there initially either. I think after 8 Bells and 2008 and Big Brown as well, we've really altered fundamentally the focus of the business and the game, and I think for all the right reasons. You hear safety and integrity talked about constantly in this business, and for good reason. So that's where we are today. As I said, we've evolved, and there's more change to come, I'm sure.
Now, Alex, we're going to get back into a lot of those areas, particularly the work you are doing in the halls of Congress and in Washington. But I want to go back to one of the first things that I talked about. And people, not everybody liked them, as you well know, but we remember those Go Baby Go commercials. And the NTRA started out running, having a great deal to do with all the television production of horse racing, and there was a lot of national marketing. Now, you said you think the handicapping championship is a very important marketing tool. I wouldn't disagree with you with that, but right now we don't really have any national marketing of the sport because that's a role that has sort of been diminished at the NTRA. Do you ever see the NTRA going back in that direction, being involved in more marketing aspects of the sport?
Well, we do have those conversations with our stakeholders from time to time, and the primary issue is cost. Long ago, it was identified to us that to do a credible national marketing campaign would require somewhere in the neighborhood of $20 million annually. It's a very expensive proposition to really make a dent in the national effort. Now, we do have a significant social media presence, and I think that is in some ways a national marketing campaign. But on the scale that we talked about with an ad like Go Baby Go, I don't see the NTRA doing that again because I don't see our racetrack operators or our horsemen really supportive of that particular approach right now. I do think the NHC does serve a marketing function because it engages our key customers, our big customers. It does so on a national basis, and the National Handicapping Championship, we crowned the Handicapper of the Year. We give that person an Eclipse Award because of that's what they earn. And those, I think, have brought some prestige and some visibility to horse players, which we view as an important effort and an important role for the NTRA to play. I will also mention briefly, it's amazing. We do not do television anymore, and that was another decision made by the board, because of the expense. But it's been interesting to see how now the NBC Sports has picked up that mantle. And I think at the last conference that I attended, it was John Miller from NBC Sports indicated that they're approaching 90 hours a year in televised horse racing. So we're seeing a lot of horse racing on television on NBC, and I think they're to be commended for that. We're glad to see that.
So now back to what you've been talking about so far is all the time you're spending in Washington. And I'm sure one of the things that you are spending time is on something that some trainers will say is a crisis. And we all know there's a new person in the White House by the name of Donald Trump. We all know that one of his pet issues is illegal immigration. Now, on the surface, that may be something that some people are in favor for, but at the same time, it is hard on industries like horse racing that rely heavily on foreign workers. So you've got a couple different problems, including the H-2B visa issue, which allows people to come in here legally to work. They're harder to get. Also the problem, frankly, of a crackdown on illegal workers. And it's no secret that there are a lot of people working on the backstretches today that are not documented, that are primarily in this country illegally. So whether you're if you're a Democrat, Republican, doesn't really matter, if you're a racehorse trainer, you're very concerned about this. How serious is this issue, and what is the NTRA doing about it?
Well, in certain parts of the country, it's very serious. Your article earlier this week, I think, outlined in great detail, especially some of the problems we're seeing in the Northeast, in the Mid-Atlantic states. We're not hearing about it so much in other parts of the country yet, but you're correct. The Trump administration is focused on border security. They want to build a wall. They want to make sure that that they limit the flow of immigrants, whether they be legal or illegal, across the border. And there's a lot of negative publicity that itself is causing the worker shortages we're talking about. You know, in our industry, we use the H-2B program, which is a temporary seasonal non-ag program for foreign workers. It's a very specific program, but we're not the only ones that use it. You've got landscaping companies, resorts, restaurants, theme parks. In fact, we only use about 1% of those H-2Bs, and that's part of the problem, is that as the pool of foreign workers shrinks because of the fear of crossing the border at all, you're seeing more and more reliance on this H-2B program, and those H-2B visas are capped at 66,000 a year, and they're very quickly being snapped up by these large landscaping companies, resorts, restaurants, as we mentioned. So we're in a battle to get our share of H-2B workers, and frankly, we're losing that battle because there's so much competition. Now, the good news is that while I don't expect a lot of change out of the Trump administration, when the funding bill was passed, the omnibus bill was passed in late April. It was passed to keep the government operating through the end of this current fiscal year, which ends at the end of September. There was language in that bill to allow the Trump administration, the Department of Homeland Security, together with the Department of Labor, to expand, in fact, double the H-2B program through the end of fiscal year 2017. And so there was some hope that the administration was going to step up and recognize the fact that we're really not talking about immigration here. We're talking about temporary workers, which is a separate issue. But what we found is that we're getting just as much pushback on temporary workers. The Department of Labor sees this as a wage issue. They see temporary workers as driving down the cost of labor and keeping U.S. citizens working for less money. We're listening to trainers. They're telling us, look, we are doing everything we can to fulfill the obligations under the regulations of H-2B, and they are very strict. You have to these jobs have to be posted. You have to pay prevailing wage as defined by the Department of Labor. So they're very they're onerous, and even following those programs, these trainers are not able to find the backstretch workers they need. And so it is a crisis situation in some places. And you're right. What people do with that H-2B visas is they turn to the market for undocumented workers, which have been ample in the past but aren't because people are staying home. So it begs the question I guess I should back up and say the Trump administration has the ability to open up and expand the program. They have chosen not to. And frankly, right now, we are not optimistic that they're going to change their tune, because they're continuing to hold this notion of Buy America. You know, America First is a very strong mantra right now. And so we don't see much in the way of liberalization on the part of this H-2B cap at 66,000 between now and the end of September, which is going to continually put pressure on the industry. So we're hopeful. We continue to make the case that expanding the program actually allows us to do right by all workers, including U.S. workers, because it gives the U.S. workers a chance to get those jobs that they're not taking, but also It also gives the workforce that we need to keep doing business. There is a bill in Congress right now to create a permanent solution by creating a returning worker exemption under the H-2B program. That bill is going nowhere. It's facing a lot of headwinds. So, you know, I unfortunately, we see this as a difficult situation, and it's going to be hard to see progress. Bottom line, we think the only solution is comprehensive immigration reform, but that's kind of a four-letter word in Washington right now. And so for the time being, we'll continue to push for additional H-2B visas and for this returning worker exemption.
Well, it's not exactly good news for trainers as they continue to struggle. So, Alex, let's move on to another thing that has something to do with Washington. And the Horse Racing Integrity Act has come and gone. It's been reintroduced again in Washington. It's even has stricter language than some of its previous versions, talking about banning all race day medications. Most people believe that it is not going to become a law, that it's just not a hot button issue and isn't getting much traction in Washington. But nonetheless, does the NTRA have a official position on it, and if so, what is it?
Well, this is a tough one for us. Our board is very diverse. We've got members on both sides, in fact, multiple points of view on the role of the federal government or on centralization of these issues in general. You know, we certainly respect all points of view here, but we have been unable to find a middle ground. So we haven't taken a position on this. This piece of legislation. But that's not to say we're sitting on the sidelines. We're not, we're continuing to focus on safety and integrity, as we talked about. National uniformity through the Racing Medication and Testing Consortium, work with the Racing Commissioners International. I'm chairman of the RMTC, and I work every day to see what we can do in the interim to make the situation as good as it can be if we're going to continue with a decentralized multi-state solution. We've got to do our best, whichever way we go. So we continue to push forward, look for common ground, and make progress where we can.
So understood, and that's kind of the answer I expected, because you have to listen to your board, and you've got horsemen on one side, and you've got other people that are anti-drug, et cetera. But if not for the perception, and I'll use the word perception, that does exist that the sport has a drug problem, probably you wouldn't even hear about something like the Horse Racing Integrity Act. So this is all an offshoot of the reputation that things have kind of gone run amok in American racing with drugs. And you could look at it from two different aspects. One would be, you know, what we call the vernaculars, the juicers, the guys that use illegal drugs to improve the performance of their horses. And then they also fall in the category of permissive medications, which are the rules are much more liberal in the United States than virtually anywhere else in the world so far as what can and can't be given to a horse. So is it fair to say that the sport does have a problem? And if so, what can be done about it?
Well, we can certainly say we have a perception problem. There's no question about that. And it would be crazy of me to sit here and say we don't have a problem. I will say that we do have in place, primarily through the Racing Medication and Testing Consortium, a very credible body that looks at these issues on a daily basis. The RMTC began as a way to regulate the use of medications in the sport, and we've come a long way. And I would challenge you to sit down with Dionne Benson and have her on your show to let her talk to you about the similarities between the way we regulate medications in the U.S. and the way they regulate medications across the world. With the exception of Lasix and Butte, I think you'd find that we're very comparable across the country. And we're making progress on the Butte front. We're doing some research right now to see if there's a way, if there's a need to be more strict on that front. I would say that on the performance-enhancing side, we constantly are challenged at the RMTC to do the kind of research that looks out the future. You know, what people say, and I think you have to believe that the cheaters are always one step ahead of the drug testers. But I can tell you we have great labs. There was a day when we would have to hang our heads in shame and say we don't really have a good testing system. But now all but two labs in America are RMTC accredited, which means they're applying the WADA code in their testing standards, and they go through proficiency testing. And so we've made a major improvement in the way in the quality of our laboratories. It always makes me a little nervous when someone talks about what do you believe, because this is a scientific area, and what I have constantly learned by my work on the RMTC is how much science is involved and how much science is behind the things that we do. We have an amazing group called the Scientific Advisory Committee of the RMTC, and they come together twice a year. In fact, we're going to get together in a couple of weeks in California, and they bring an enormous amount of energy and experience, over 300 years of equine testing experience. And you can't say that testing is always the answer. You know, Lance Armstrong was never caught, so you can't quote, 98% of our samples come back clean as proof that there is no cheating. We have to continue to do the kind of research that we're able to do. That we have to keep doing more of it to find those people who are taking advantage. Now, the vast majority are absolutely following the rules, but human nature being what it is, you've got to assume that there's some out there who aren't, and it's our job to find them and do a better job of that, to lessen the perception and the reality. I think that while we haven't solved the problem, we certainly have made major strides in the last 5 years, certainly since I've been watching it closely at the RMTC. And the National Uniform Medication Program, which is comprehensive in nature, it deals with medications that can be used. It mandates third-party administration of Lasix, keeps the vets out of the stalls. We have updated and toughened penalties that especially go after multiple offenders, and then the accreditation program and the lab proficiency programs. All those things are major steps forward. Now, we haven't, not every state has stepped up, and there remains the problem. We need states to step up and throw off some of their parochial attitudes. I mean, if there's anything frustrating me about the industry in this regard, it's that we do have states that cling to their own views and their own science, or lack of science, as a solution. And we've tried daily to convince people this is a national business. With simulcasting, you can no longer exist as an island in this business. You've got to step up and apply the same rules as the rest of us do. So those are things that we are doing to address the drug problem. Are we there yet? No. But are we taking these issues seriously and doing a better job than we've done in the past? Yes. Stay tuned on what the ultimate solutions on these things are, but I think that it's not for lack of effort.
We're going to talk horse player issues with Alex Waldrop when we come back on the TDN podcast after this message from TaylorMade.
TaylorMade, where customer success is our primary focus.
Ladies and gentlemen, we present Harvard of Grace.
7-10, you want to get 10 million, Hunter? Right here, we're going to get it. That's away now, 10. 10-10, here, we're going to get it. I'm going to get 10. Bruce, right here, $10 million even.
TaylorMade, where customer success is our primary focus. But don't take our word for it. Here's what some of our most satisfied customers have to say.
This is Brian Kahn, Los Angeles, California. I've been associated with, worked for, and been a client of TaylorMade and the TaylorMade family for close to 30 years now. Had great success with them. They've always been transparent and honest, and I always felt I was getting the right end of the deal with them. Highly recommend their services, from boarding, public sales, private sales. I've used all. All have been a success and a pleasure to deal with.
Here's longtime TaylorMade client Rick Porter of Fox Hill Farms, owner of numerous champions and Grade 1 winners, such as 2011 Horse of the Year, Havre de Grace.
I've been doing business with TaylorMade for over 20 years. Everyone knows they are the best sellers at auction, but they have also done great work for me in the private market. They have an unbelievable network that can help you buy or sell privately in a very professional and transparent way. I wish I had these guys working for me when I was in the car business.
Discover what TaylorMade can do for you. Visit TaylorMadeFarm.com.
Alex, you told us that the NTRA is very involved with horse player issues, and as a horse player myself, that's very welcome news. So let's touch on a couple of those. And as we well know, ADWs have more or less taken over the wagering world. I mean, so few people, unfortunately, go live to the racetrack. And even the bricks and mortar OTBs are seeing a decline in business as well. So it's all about ADWs, and people need to fund those ADW accounts. And it was pointed out to me the other day by somebody, because I don't have this particular problem, but he said that he just can't get any money into his account because his ADW will not accept his credit card. And I guess some banks do, some banks don't. But this is not a problem for other gambling industries, particularly the daily fantasy sports market, which seems to take everybody's credit card. So this is probably an issue that hasn't got a lot of attention in racing. But if people can't fund their ADW accounts, they're not going to bet. If they're not going to bet, we have a big problem. So is this something that has been brought up with the NTRA and that people are taking a look at?
Absolutely. We actually have been involved in this issue from the inception of the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act, which was passed back in 2006. It created an exception for for fantasy sports, which is why the daily fantasy guys don't seem to have the problem we have. The UI guy, as we call it for short, is a little bit less clear when it comes to horse racing. And so over the years, we have worked with the credit card companies, that be Visa and MasterCard, to educate them. And they have come around to the point where they're comfortable with their cards being used. And that we've even created a merchant code, the 7802 merchant code, which is specifically for ADWs to use. Unfortunately, there are certain banks out there that continue to be unwilling to fund accounts. And they can do that under UIGA with impunity because it says UIGA did a lot of things not related to our business, but it said to banks, we want you to police the gambling market and we want you to err on the side of caution. Therefore, if you think it's a close call, you can decide not to fund an account or accept a transaction, and we won't hold it against you. Well, unfortunately, that's opened the door, and there's some banks that are taking advantage of that. So we're working currently on this issue. We're working with major ADWs. They've identified the problem for us. They think about 15% of transactions on a daily basis are a problem. A much higher percentage on big days, because that's when people want to open accounts and there's frustration on those days. And anytime someone can't open an account with a credit card, that's bad for us. So it's a problem that's got to be solved. Key members of the Congress are working with us. It's a complex issue, but we think we've got a plan that's going to help us get beyond this. Financial institutions, by nature, are risk averse, but clearly these policies that these banks are using against us are costing the industry millions of dollars, costing us fans. So we're going to appeal to them through our allies on the Capitol Hill, and we have a plan. We think it's going to be successful. We're rolling it out over the next 90 days, and we'll keep the industry apprised. But we're hopeful that we can get a couple of these big banks, a couple in particular, Bank of America and Chase. They're both difficult. PNC is great. Some banks do accept some customers and not others, and that's we're still trying to get to the bottom of that. But we're absolutely working on it. ADWs are very supportive, and so I think we've got a plan that'll work.
So now one of the great frustrations horse players have is you have a great win at the track and you plunk down your money and you hit a pick six or a big superfect or something. And then you go up in cash and all of a sudden Uncle Sam has his hand out and you're signing for it. They may take money out depending on how much is been hit. And it's really, as you well know, and I know you agree with me, it's just about the most unfair thing there is. Now, the latest we heard was that the NTRA has definitely made some inroads. It looked like you were on the way to getting the rules changed, so at least they would not take your win wager as if you played only one ticket. They're finally coming to realize that the guy that hit a $7,000 pick six might have played $1,000 to hit it, not just $2. So what's the latest on that, and is that pretty close to becoming the new policy?
Yes. We were fortunate enough to find people at the Treasury Department. In fact, the Assistant Secretary of Treasury for Tax Policy was an old Monmouth Park guy. He went to the track with his grandmother back when he was a child, and so he got it. He understood the problem that horse players were having, and so with his help and others, we convinced the IRS and the Treasury together to propose rules. They did that at the end of last year. Those rules were exactly what we wanted. They had even examples in the rules that we had asked for, and they used those examples almost verbatim. The public comment period began when they proposed those rules. It ended on March 30th. It should be the final comment period. After that time, it was in theory possible that they would finalize those regs very quickly. However, you've got a new administration. There's been some lack of there's some delay in filling some key positions, and so until those positions get filled, it may be difficult for that rule to be passed out permanently. But we do expect it to be published in the not too distant future. We don't expect significant changes in the proposed rule, and because we saw there were no comments that were negative. There was one comment that was that we got behind and explained, and actually submitted a new example to explain to the IRS and the Treasury how to fix the problem that was identified, and we think that that's going to be well received. As you said, it's going to make the process easier and more fair, be less a tax burden on our bettors, and as we argue to them, it's going to improve compliance, which was important to them because they want people to pay taxes in the final analysis.
Now,
meantime, we're still working with racetracks and tow companies to make sure that when this happens, we're going to be ready on day one and it'll be implemented. So we're confident, and we're not taking anything for granted, but we think that this is a wild guess, frankly, before the end of the year, hopefully, but maybe sooner.
That's good news. Now, Alex, I would, as a horse player, I personally, first of all, commend you for your efforts there, and it is a step in the right direction. But I would argue that we need to, you've moved the ball to the 50-yard line. Let's get it into the end zone. In Canada, if you hit a $25,000 pick six, they don't take any money out of it. And I think one of the frustrations are, look, I mean, we play this sport because we gamble on it because it's fun, it's enjoyable. 99% of the people that bet on horse racing, frankly, lose money. That's the nature of gambling. So if you win a big bet, at the end of the year, you're probably a loser at the racetrack anyways. So can we ever take, once you get through this, can we get to the next step where you hit that $25,000 pick six at Gulfstream Park? They just hand you the $25,000, and it's up to you as an honest taxpayer to deal with it. And come April 15th,
Not likely, Bill. I hate to be negative. I wish we worked for that very solution for several years before I came to the NTRA and in the early days of my efforts at the NTRA. But we quickly found that any changes to the tax code would impact so many other gambling, other forms of gambling. You're taking something back from the Treasury that they have today. They don't do that, generally speaking. It's a zero-sum game with them. If they give us this, if they eliminate taxation on gambling, then they're going to have to tax someone else. It's a very difficult proposition to be successful, and it's exactly why we went after the rule change that we did, because we felt that if we waited for a change in the law, we'd be waiting forever. And also would say it is unfortunately the case that tax policy is social policy, and there's an element of the federal government that wants to discourage people from gambling, and I think that's just the reality. It's interesting you say Canada. I don't think there's any other – most other countries in the world do not tax gambling.
Right.
We are unique in that, but we can discuss all day why social policy behind that. But the fact is, it's very difficult to take something away once the government starts to impose a tax on it. And so that's why we went this road.
Okay, I guess we'll just for now have to be happy with the victory that you've achieved so far, appear to be a imminent victory. Now,
we think 90% of the tickets will be resolved now.
Terrific.
90% of the time that people are going to the window, they'll no longer be going to the window.
Very good. So speaking of taxes, for the ownership of racehorses, it's also been a problem. And this is probably going back, I guess, to the 70s, where the tax laws were changed dramatically, whereas it became much harder for you to write off your losses as an owner when it came to owning racehorses. Now, we know that people like betting, mainly own horses for the thrill. It's not necessarily for the bottom line benefits, because again, it's not necessarily something you can make money at. So what about that? You know, bring us up to speed on the NTRA's efforts to make tax laws better for the owner.
Well, it's interesting. There is actually a major piece of tax reform legislation that's being discussed in Washington, D.C. right now. And we're at the table looking at just exactly what that's going to be. Now, they're preoccupied with health care right now, but assuming they can get health care resolved before, I think the goal is to do something before July the 4th, then they'll spend the remainder of the time up into the summer break or maybe the fall looking at tax issues. They're going to be dropping corporate. Are they going to try to drop corporate and individual rates? That will be good. There's some talk about eliminating depreciation altogether. You know, right now, one of the issues that we deal with, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but depreciation is, especially a seven-year depreciation schedule for a racehorse, is a very onerous thing when you've plunked down a big chunk of change and they let you write it off over such a long period of time. You know, owners would be benefited by being able to write it off immediately. So there's some talk about eliminating depreciation. That would come with the inability to take certain deductions for interest expense. So that may be a wash. We're not sure about that. And there's also talk of a border adjustment. It's lots of things happening at the federal level. We're still watching it. I'm not sure what that's going to be. In the meantime, we are still focused, number one, on reinstating, keeping the three-year depreciation in place for all racehorses. Currently, well, we've had a three-year depreciation schedule on racehorses for the last 7 years because it was in the Farm Bill, and then we've come back and had this provision in the Extenders Bill for the last 2 years, and we'll do it again this year if necessary, which says that even though the law says that a horse put into service as a two-year-old must be depreciated over 7 years, we have a provision that says, no, we'll treat all racehorses as three-year depreciation, whether they're put into service as two-year-olds or later. And we'll continue to fight for that. That's very important. Second, what we have already got in place is bonus depreciation, which is 50% additional appreciation for new yearlings through 2017. That drops to 40% in 2018, and then in 2019 it's going to be down to 30%. But that bonus depreciation is there, and it was put in place back at the end of 2016. There's also a Section 179 expense allowance of $500,000 for new and used property, which would include yearlings as well as broodmares. So we're constantly pushing these tax incentives and watching out to make sure that they're in place for owners. And we've had good success, and we'll continue to watch this tax reform package and see if there are other opportunities. So stay tuned on that one.
All right. Stay tuned to our podcast, because after this message from TaylorMade, we'll talk sports betting with NTRA President and CEO Alex Waldrop.
M. Shawish has taken the lead as they come into the final 16th.
The main reason we ended up trying M. Shawish on the dirt is he was just so impressive in the mornings to watch train on the dirt. And, you know, he continually worked exceptionally well, showed us that, you know, he was able not only to finish his work strongly, but then gallop out brilliantly. And you know, we just felt like he had a dirt pedigree as well, being a Medaglia d'Oro out of a Thunder Gulch mare, that it, you know, wouldn't be a surprise if he ran well in the dirt. And certainly he did.
And it is M. Shawish, the winner of the Don Handicap.
Alex, horse racing is just one part of the big gambling pie, and what has happened now is the American Sports Betting Coalition has launched a campaign to repeal the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act, or PASPA, and that is, of course, the act that has made it illegal outside of Nevada and a few other places to bet on sports other than horse racing. Most believe it's only a matter of time before sports betting is legal throughout much of the country. If that's the case, would that be a good or bad thing for horse racing?
Well, we're certainly going to get the input from our membership on that point. You know, we've been at the federal gaming table for a long time, and we've been able to secure significant wins for the industry. And the question for the business is, do we want the additional competition, or is it additional competition? You know, we think the illegal gaming market has been estimated at $400 billion a year, illegal bet on sports. So wouldn't it be better to make it legal and bring it to the racetracks where racetracks can participate? I know Monmouth Park wants to do that now, and certainly other tracks are telling us that. We're going to be in conversation with our members. We're going to be at the table when this discussion starts, and we'll have a position. We don't really have anything right now. We'll be talking about it with our board in July. But I think when we come out of this that there will be a decision on our part to pursue it in some ways, so long as it's a repeal. It kicks it back to the states, and we have an equal chance to get these facilities in our racetracks.
Well, that would certainly be good news for racing, and you're right. Monmouth Park is very keen to have sports betting at the racetrack, not only there, but throughout the racetracks in New Jersey and the Atlantic City casinos. One of the things, news stories this week, it doesn't directly affect the NTRA, but maybe it does. There was this fascinating case of the Derby Wars fantasy contest that was sued by the Stronach Group, which basically argued that a fantasy horse racing contest was not that different than an ADW, and therefore they require that Derby Wars contribute something back to the Stronach tracks for using their product. And this sheds a lot of light and also opens up a lot of questions about handicapping contests in general. Now, the NTRA's National Horse Players Championship, like you said, is a huge deal. Are you completely convinced that it can proceed as normal now? And what does this all mean for the handicapping contest business out there?
We don't anticipate any disruption in our contest format. We applaud the outcome. We think that the judge did a good job of parsing the issues, and I think it's helped define the rights of owners and racetracks to control who uses their product and how. We're currently actively seeking what we're calling consent agreements with the major racing operators and with horse organizations, because we're nonprofit, because that handicapping championship funnels money right back in the industry to do things like address the withholding and reporting issues. We're confident we're going to be able to continue to proceed without disruption.
All right. Now, Alex, when I asked you our first question, you talked about one of the things that are most important to the NTRA is safety and integrity. That's a wide umbrella, but under that umbrella, I think the thorny issue of horse aftercare falls into that. And it is a problem. These horses are useful on the racetrack for so long. Most of them are not qualified to go on to careers in the breeding industry. And then the whole idea of what do you do with them? Unfortunately, for some people, the answer has been to send them to slaughter. I think you'll agree with me that this is, again, one of those issues where racing is heading in the right direction, but still has a long way to go. Now, this is something the NTRA has also been concerned with. Where do you think we are on this issue? And how, as a sport, and just as human beings, can we do better towards these racehorses who are really, you know, not only the horse players, they are what make this, the horse is what makes this game so wonderful, and they're these great animals, and we want this problem desperately to go away. Maybe that's a Pollyannish to think they can go away 100%, but can't we do better and how?
We can do better. There's some great efforts out there. We support each and every one of them. One of the first things we put in our safety and integrity accreditation code of standards was that any track that wanted to be accredited had to be actively engaged in making sure that the horses coming off that track were being funneled to retirement, retraining, rehoming, so that they had second careers or safe homes after their racing days were over. And state and tracks have stepped up. I think I can tell you that without fear of being contradicted, that the attitude towards aftercare has changed probably as dramatically as any attitude that I've seen over the last 10 years. There was a real resistance to that years ago, and I see people understanding and applauding and supporting that. Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance has really been a focal point for lots of big operations and organizations to get involved, but there are so many others that are doing good work there. And I also would say that there, again, there's where the Racing Medication and Testing Consortium has come in. One of the things that we heard early on was that part of the reason our horses weren't being adopted and didn't have second careers was because they were being overraced and overtrained, and they retired with too many injuries to participate, and therefore had to be euthanized or didn't have good second careers. One of the things we focused on at the RMPC was regulating corticosteroids, which was a culprit. There was a reason why horses were over-medicated. They were over-treated with multiple corticosteroids. And in states that are adopting the uniform rules, that's gone. The vets have to treat injury, and they have to use their corticosteroids very judiciously. And if there's any reason why any state for a state to get behind the reforms, it's that one in particular, because it forces vets to do a better job of diagnosing and treating illness rather than going in and giving horses multiple shots in joints that may or may not be necessary, and using medications that frankly were bad for the horse. So we're making progress on the athlete that's actually retiring. We're operating more and more opportunities. We're working more cooperatively with animal welfare organizations. I think that the attitudes are changing. Is it enough? No. We still see horses that don't have homes, horses that are still going to slaughter. All those are unacceptable. There's more work to do, but we've made progress, and we'll just have to keep making progress. And I can assure you the NTRA, that's a top priority of ours.
Well, Alex, good to have you on for a few minutes this afternoon for our TDN podcast. It definitely sounds like the NTRA is on top of things. We commend you. Keep up the good work, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.